You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, February 8th, 2021.
Later in the program, we have the latest edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where we ask Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton listener-posed questions on community issues. More on that in today's feature reports.
Also coming up in the next half hour, COVID-19 cases are trending downward across the state and in Monroe County. However, health experts are warning the positive trend may be short-lived. More in today's headlines. But first, we turn to WFHB correspondent Aaron Comforti in today's local news brief.
Indiana University Bloomington added more than 3,200 previously unreported positive COVID-19 test results to its COVID-19 dashboard website last Wednesday, February 3rd. The batch of unreported cases brings Indiana University's flagship Bloomington campus's all-time COVID-19 case count to 7,459, a 70% increase. Days before the university published the backlogged cases, WFHB reported that Indiana University Bloomington's all-time case count stood at about only 4,200. Associate Vice President for Enterprise Systems at Indiana University, Aaron Neal, confirmed WFHB's 4,200 cases figure in a February 4th email, noting, quote, "We agree that the previously published positive numbers totaled roughly 4,200. The difference between the 4,200 and the new numbers are made of voluntary testing positives and other known cases." The explanation Aaron Neal provided clarifies where the newly reported cases come from, but the numbers don't seem to add up perfectly. Indiana University spokesperson Dr. Chuck Carney wrote in an email to WFHB, quote, "As you can imagine, building such a project from scratch presents challenges, and changes such as we have made can result in finding some things to shore up." On February 3rd, 2021, the university revamped its dashboard to include a number of new sections, features, and statistics. One of them was the all-time cases figure. Previously, the university opted to separate the all-time cases figure into three distinct testing categories, in effect obscuring the figure. The university's approach to its dashboard varied significantly from the state of Indiana's dashboard, which has had an all-time case count figure since its inception. Aaron Neal also indicated that the majority of the roughly 3,200 newly reported cases come from a section titled Other Known Cases. An explanation in the university's COVID-19 dashboard describes the contents of the Other Known Cases section in the following terms, quote, "Students, faculty, and staff are required to self-report all positive COVID-19 testing results obtained outside of IU testing mechanisms. The section consists of those outside positive test results." The Indiana University COVID-19 dashboard puts the number of all-time other known cases at just over 3,000. However, a WFHB analysis of reporting totals contained in a bar chart in that section found that only 64% of those 3,000 roughly cases are accounted for. The sources of the remaining over 1,000 cases are not given on the dashboard. Aaron Neal responded to a question about the statistical inconsistency in an email to WFHB, writing, quote, "We believe this is because the bar chart was time-bound to August 23, 2020, and there are actually more cases prior to that date that total the roughly 3,000. Indiana University's dashboard, however, does not specify whether the university knew of these previously unreported cases as they were discovered, or if it learned about some or all of them considerably after they were discovered. University officials have not responded to multiple requests for comment from WFHB as to the question of when the university found out about the previously unreported cases. From WFHB, I'm Aaron Comforti.
Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill stated COVID-19 cases were declining during the February 5th COVID-19 press conference. She spoke of Monroe County cases per 100,000.
And this week on our metrics map, we went to yellow and we had 171 cases per 100,000. And as I looked at that today, it is still kind of trending downward and we want to keep that going. Our current goal right now is to get that under, to be under 100 per 100,000, but our ultimate goal is for it to be under 10. And so we still have a ways to go with that.
Caudill mentioned gathering size limits were moved to a maximum of 50 people due to change in health order regulations. However, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton reminded community members the gathering size limit remains at 15 inside the city limits. Caudill mentioned demand for the COVID-19 vaccine was not as high in surrounding counties.
If you are eligible, do try to schedule your appointment. You can make it anywhere that's available. We are seeing demand in Monroe County is extremely high. Some of the surrounding counties, the demand is not so high. So you may be able to get an appointment in a nearby county quicker than you can here. The other thing that I would say that we've noticed is that some people may click on first available appointment and they may not see anything until several weeks out. If you encounter that, please go ahead and pick a date and check those dates. Sometimes times open up and populate and you may find an appointment much sooner than what that first available seems to show you.
IU Health South Central Region Program Director for Community Relations and Outreach, Shana Zhergish, reported as of February 4th, Bloomington had used approximately 18,800 vaccines. Caudill mentioned rapid result COVID-19 tests are available at the South Morton Street location for any persons.
Cases of COVID-19 are trending downward nationally, statewide, and locally. However, health experts say it's too early for the vaccine to have any substantial effect on the decline of new coronavirus cases. During Governor Holcomb's COVID-19 update last week, State Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box acknowledged the state's declining positivity rate.
We continue to see improvement in our positivity rate. Today, it stands at 7.7%, which continues its downward trend of the last few weeks. We also have seen a decline in the number of Hoosiers hospitalized with COVID symptoms. About 1,600 Hoosiers were hospitalized with symptoms of COVID as of yesterday, down from about 1,900 last week. Our daily hospital admissions have fallen below 200, down from a peak of 526 on December the 7th. Our color-coded county maps also continue to improve. This week, just four of our 92 counties are in red on the two-score map, down from five last week. 3 weeks ago, 73 were in red. We also have 29 counties in yellow this week, a significant improvement from the eight that were in yellow last week. It's incredibly encouraging to see this change. Our advisory map, which indicates the level of restrictions that counties must follow, shows 78 counties in orange, up from 58 last week. Only seven counties are in a red advisory level, while another seven have moved to yellow.
Although the latest numbers may look promising, the downward trend is not assured to continue. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, warns of several new variants starting to spread in the U.S.
Although we have seen declines in cases and admissions and a recent slowing of deaths, cases remain extraordinarily high, still twice as high as the peak number of cases over the summer. And the continued proliferation of variants that likely have increased transmissibility, that spread more easily, threatens to reverse these recent trends. Based on contact tracing and recent variant cases, not wearing masks and participating in in-person social gatherings have contributed to the variant spread.
Another possible reason for the decline has to do with record high cases last month as a result of increased indoor gatherings over the holiday season. Dr. Todd Ellerin, infectious disease expert at South Shore Health in Massachusetts, warned that the declining positivity rate might be deceiving.
I don't even think we've seen the peak number of deaths from the New Year's Eve celebration. That's probably going to be over the next week. What I'm seeing is we're being hit by tidal waves. And what you just reported, yes, it's good news, but it's still a large wave. It's still winter. The virus loves to spread indoors. We have pandemic exhaustion. We're hearing about more variants that are more contagious. I'm afraid that the darkest days are not over yet.
Dr. Christina Box said regular COVID-19 safety precautions are still necessary in limiting the spread of the virus, as the state has a limited supply of vaccines to distribute.
As I've cautioned before, these changes do not mean that we are out of the woods. Even as more Hoosiers receive their vaccine, we are still very limited in the number of people we can vaccinate due to national supplies. We will not achieve herd immunity for many months, and the new variants of the virus that are emerging will require us to remain vigilant about masking, social distancing, staying home if you're ill, and getting tested, and then following guidelines for isolation and quarantine.
As of Monday, nearly 700,000 people received their first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine in Indiana. About 232,000 Indiana residents are fully vaccinated. However, according to the CDC, not even 1/10 of the U.S. population has been vaccinated. That means we won't see the true effectiveness of the COVID-19 vaccine until at least the summer or even as late as fall 2021.
County Planner Tammy Bierman presented three variances for a storage structure in Bean Blossom Township to the Monroe County Board of Zoning Appeals. She spoke about the structure being built on a sinkhole conservancy area during their February 3rd meeting.
The structure was in a sinkhole, which now leads to these other two variances that are being requested, 2101-VIR-01, a buildable area variance from Chapter 804, specifically sinkhole conservancy areas, and then also 2101-VAR-02, the sinkhole conservancy area standards variance from Chapter 829.
Bierman stated the building was built in April of 2020. She mentioned Patriot Engineering Environmental Firm performed a karst analysis of the area. She spoke of four conditions based off of the engineering firm and county MS4 coordinator reports.
So one is to submit a final plat amendment petition to satisfy the MS4 coordinator's request to amend the sinkhole conservancy area and add a drainage easement to lot 26 of the Pinewood subdivision as depicted in Exhibit 6. And I did not... It's this one here. So kind of redefining not this yellow, but the red and having a drainage easement on the lot. And then two would be to add a note to the plat stating nothing is to be placed in the drainage easement. And of course the plat is signed by the owner. So that would also satisfy stormwater MS4 coordinator's comments. And number three is submit a grading permit application for review prior to any further construction or installing culvert for the driveway, as referred to in Exhibit 5. And again, where this drainage is, there's a driveway that crosses here. And we just want to make sure that all the water flowing off the structure would continue down towards the ravine this way.
Bierman stated the fourth condition was for petitioners to submit a residential driveway permit application. Attorney Michael Carman stated an additional condition could redirect any drainage from the shed fed to the drainage easement area. Board members approved the variance with five conditions.
A collaboration between the state of Indiana and the nonprofit Overdose Lifeline led to a project which will distribute kits containing naloxone, or Narcan, in every county across the state. Narcan is a medication that reverses overdoses by opioids. It essentially acts as an overdose antidote. Overdose Lifeline will place 215 outdoor dispensers containing the overdose antidotes across the state. The nonprofit helps individuals, families, and communities impacted by the disease of addiction and substance abuse disorder through advocacy, education, and support. Brandon George, executive director of the Indiana Addiction Coalition, said addiction should be treated as a chronic condition.
We all know that substance use disorder is a chronic condition. We can call it a disease or a behavioral disorder, but the point is we know it's a chronic condition. And we normally treat chronic conditions for a long, long period of time. Cancer, diabetes, congestive heart failure, these chronic conditions, people will be plugged into the healthcare system for years and years and years, probably the rest of their life. But with substance use disorder, our treatment models are really not reflective of this. And they oftentimes are set up much more in an acute care model.
Douglas Huntsinger, chairman of the Indiana Commission to Combat Drug Abuse, said that coronavirus pandemic has led to an increase in overdoses as a result of opioids.
It's no secret that COVID-19 challenged us to balance the side effects of a pandemic with a pre-existing epidemic that had already taken countless lives prior to 2020. In 2020 alone, we experienced a 67% increase in naloxone administration by EMS compared to 2019. And our preliminary data shows we've already seen a nearly 50% increase in overdoses in our emergency departments in 2020 compared to 2019. And Indiana isn't alone in this evolving crisis. The CDC reports that overdoses from opioids and other drugs rose 18% nationwide during the first 4 months of the pandemic, with more than 40 states seeing an increase in opioid-related fatalities. Recovering from the toll that the pandemic has left on our treatment and recovery communities will be an uphill climb. But I believe now more than ever, Hoosiers are aware and attentive to mental health and addiction issues. The more our families, community leaders, our lawmakers understand the larger impact, and ultimately, the more lives we can save.
Governor Eric Holcomb announced the project to implement Nalec box units in every county on Friday. The estimated $58,000 cost of the project will be paid for through a federal grant to the state, according to the Associated Press. Any business or community organization can request to install the anti-overdose kits in a highly visible area at overdoselifeline.org/2020-indiana-naloxone-request.
Ellettsville Plan Commission approved final plat approval for the Burns subdivision. Planning Director Kevin Toloti spoke of the request during their February 4th meeting.
Right now, it's a one lot, about 14 and a half acres that they basically are going to split in half. About a tenth of an acre will go to right of way. It's zoned single family residential. There's a house on the one lot. The second lot will just have a barn so that something else could be built on that in the future. All the structures are going to meet the setbacks. They won't even be close. That won't be an issue.
Petitioner Rusty Byrne stated that they may build a smaller home on the lot with the shed and sell the larger home on the neighboring lot. Commissioners unanimously approved the final plat.
Now it's time for your feature reports. Up first, we have the latest edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where Assistant News Director Sydney Foreman talks to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community issues. We turn to Sydney Foreman for more.
Community members posted questions on our social media via Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, posing questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about current issues. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, John Hamilton answers these questions. The first question that I have today is, could you speak about the different locations to get a COVID-19 test versus places to get the COVID-19 vaccine?
Sure. And always check the website. You can check the city website or check the county health department website to get specifics. But COVID tests can be done at IU Health or hospital, or if you're part of the IU community, you may do things on campus with IU, as well as at the county health site, which is on South Morton Street, just across from Kroger, basically, there at downtown Kroger. All these need appointments, though, so you need to call ahead and or online get an appointment for a test. Then for vaccinations, those are in different locations, done at the hospital at IU Health, just on the south side of First Street. Again, these all require appointments. For the county vaccination facility, it's actually being done at the convention center on South College. And then there are actually going to be soon, if not today, soon starting some drugstore locations. But all of these, the best thing to do is get an appointment to do that, and then they'll direct you with very specific directions about where to go.
So then our next question comes from Instagram user Steffi, and she questions, does the mayor realize that facilities are driving students out of the community to salvage their sports seasons? She wonders why the Bloomington Parks Department has closed facilities to nonprofit sports organizations.
Well, I know this pandemic has disrupted all kinds of things, including sports seasons. We didn't have the pools open in the summer, and that I know hurt and was frustrating for swimmers. And the ice rink, I know this winter we've had on again, off again, based upon health department rules and approaches. And that's been frustrating for some of the hockey teams and, you know, even basketball and Twin Lakes and other facilities. My heart goes out. I know kids love those. Adults do too. Parents and then adult participants in those sports leagues. It's just one of the casualties of this pandemic that we have to be careful because sports settings can be, you know, people breathing a lot and breathing on each other and in close proximity can be not great for the spread. So that's our first priority, is to protect everybody's safety. We are in this county doing better than most counties in the state. We're saving lives. We're keeping people out of the hospital, and that's really important. And we very much hope that by summer and certainly by fall that we'll be able to restart many of those things. But we're going to be paying attention to health first and safety first and ask everybody to be patient with that.
And Steffi followed that question with asking why the city has decided to let the NCAA play tournament games in Bloomington, but the city teams are not allowed to practice.
Well, it's a fair question. There are certainly very, very strict protocols that have been put in place, whether it's from the NCAA for the March Madness and their teams, whether it's for some of those professional sports leagues, which we've seen that have virtually daily testing and very strict quarantine rules and bubbles. And the NCAA has worked with the state health department to develop the plans where teams only stay in a hotel floor and they only travel to and from a venue in a single bus. And there's, you know, daily testing and anybody who comes in contact. So they're very strict measures. I wish we had more testing and more protocols that we could use for everybody in sports and other activities as well. But some of those very, very strict protocols do allow a safe going forward. You know, an example in the March Madness, I think there'll be virtually no fans in those games that are played here. And again, all that is driven by the health department approving and reviewing those kind of plans to make sure we keep everybody safe.
So our next question is from the account Flavialinux. They commented the question, I would like to ask the mayor if it is his belief that the seminary and People's Park evictions accomplished their goal. Was the damage done to people's property necessary?
Well, thanks for asking. We worked very hard, we from the city, as well as other governments, as well as nonprofits, to try to help people who are experiencing homelessness, experiencing substance use disorder, or dealing with mental illness and others. And all of those factors can come to play sometimes, as I think they did in the Seminary Square, Seminary Park activities. I think every individual is a different case. We've worked very hard with our partners to try to help every individual who is experiencing homelessness or some of these other challenges to get the best connections that they can to move their lives ahead. I will say I'm glad that in these incredibly cold days and nights that we don't have people sleeping outdoors. That would be extremely dangerous, could be fatal. And I'm pleased that the whole network of social service agencies and shelters and other providers are working together very well to try to help people find better outcomes. We have new shelters open. We have intensive casework going on. So these are challenging issues, and every story is different. Every individual dealing with this gets individual attention and makes individual plans going forward. And so I'm overall encouraged that our community is embracing the future as we can with everybody. So these are dangerous, really cold days right now in particular, and it's not safe for anybody to be sleeping outdoors. So we are happy that we have more options for indoor habitation for people, and we'll continue to work on that.
And do you know what the nightly occupancy looks like at the new Beacon Shelter that opened?
I've seen some reports on it. I don't get daily reports. I know there's a group that meets, I think, three times a week to identify all the shelters, isolation shelter, different shelters, including the new one, that look at those populations. And they've been a lot of people in them getting out of the weather, which is a good thing. And we continue to try to find long-term housing for everybody. I don't know the exact numbers, but I know the new shelter that's been operated by Beacon and a bunch of different people have funded it is offering substantial. Dozens of people are staying there typically, I think, on a given night.
Do you have a question for Mayor John Hamilton? Comment that question on this coming week's post for a few minutes with the mayor to have your question answered. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Aaron Comforty, Cade Young, and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sydney Foreman.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB.